This episode is brought to you by Hill's Pet Nutrition. Every shelter pet deserves a second chance, and you're making it possible for thousands of them every day. Because when you feed your pet Hill's, you help feed a shelter pet, which helps make them healthy, happy, and more adoptable, changing their life forever. So they can change yours. Over 14 million shelter pets fed and adopted. Science did that. Visit hillspet.com/podcast to learn more.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Today on the show, just when you think the Seahawks are out of the quarterback market after acquiring Sam Howell weeks ago, think again with Michael Penix from just across the lake at the University of Washington, rising up draft boards into the middle, if not the top of the first round now. The fit is obvious in some ways with Ryan Grubb, his former offensive coordinator, now running the offense in Seattle. Might it not be the craziest thing you've ever heard for the Seahawks to still consider Michael Penix as a potential target? Well, you're going to want to listen to today's show. I am going to make the case that it isn't crazy. And in fact, it makes a lot of sense. I'll give you five definitive reasons why Michael Penix still might make sense in Seattle today on the show.
Welcome to the Seahawks Forever Podcast. In-depth analysis on everything Seahawks. And now, here's your host, Dan Viens.
Hope you're all having a lovely Easter weekend. If you're here in Seattle, lovely weather, as spring is now firmly upon us. Baseball season has begun. If you're watching on YouTube, hit that like button, subscribe to the channel, hit the bell for notification of all new episodes. If you prefer audio podcasts, you can get the show anywhere you listen to podcasts. But on Spotify, you can listen to the episodes ad-free by subscribing for a monthly cost of less than $1 a month at the moment. And if you just want to support me or the show, you can buy me a coffee or a beer. All those links are in the description, as always. If you haven't caught my show from yesterday yet, a longer show than I typically do. But anytime I get together and talk to Brandon Kane, it tends to go that way just because he's just so good at articulating his thoughts, especially when it comes to the draft. He does as much work as anyone out there on breaking down draft prospects. And in fact, said he's about 250 deep into studying this year's draft and had some great thoughts on the state of the Seahawks roster. And what he thinks they might do about that guard position, the type of player they're looking for. Some of the guys in the draft he thinks will fit and won't, much to the chagrin of JPJ fans. Spoiler alert there. But check that one out. It is, it's worth a watch. He also has kind of a surprise, not a prediction, but a name that he sees the Seahawks potentially being interested in the first round at the end of the show that hasn't really been talked about in any other circles and might surprise you. But today we're going to talk about the idea of the Seahawks still potentially being interested in Michael Penix Jr. in the first round. And right off the top, let me just say this. I'm going to spell it out here in a minute. I've put together five reasons that I think it makes sense. I am not saying it's what they should do. I'm not saying it's what I want them to do. But if you've been watching my show or any of my stuff over the last 6-7 years, you probably have a pretty good idea about how I think. And while I will give you my opinion about what I think they will or should do, and when we get closer to the draft, I will make some more definitive predictions, I tend to try to peel back the curtain. I mean, that's my goal. I want to find out how the sausage is made. And so I'm always trying to look at things from the team's perspective. And I've been around enough front office personnel and enough pro players and college players and coaches and scouts in my life that I think I have a pretty good idea of how they think. And the good ones, as much as they can be, are objective. They try to take emotion out of it and just believe their eyes when it comes to ranking players and trying to project what kind of pros they'll be, which is in direct conflict and in the exact opposite way that many of us as fans look at things, because we do it with emotion. We get attached to players. We make decisions about players based on what we've seen on TV or what we've heard someone say about them. And then once we form an opinion about them, it's or a situation involving a player, it's hard for us to change our minds. I used to be more like that. But the more I've done this over the years, the more it's kind of allowed me to dial into to just that part of the thought process, trying to figure out what they might do. And I think last year was the best example of that. How many conversations did we have? How many shows did I do? How many comments were there and conversations and debates and Twitter arguments about Devin Witherspoon potentially being the choice at number five? Because the perception out there from the masses was the Seahawks have never taken a cornerback high, and so they will never take a cornerback high. Despite the fact that starting about 3 weeks before the draft last year, the smoke just started to grow. And then it became more than smoke. It became Brady Henderson and Corbin Smith, two beat writers who cover the Seahawks, quoting sources close to the organization as saying how much they love Devin Witherspoon. But some of y'all just refused to accept it because it's just not the way it's ever been done. Well, we had never seen them have a fifth pick. And I think some people that believed that it wasn't going to happen just failed to take into account some of the context surrounding the pick, what the rest of the first round looked like. It was pretty weak. Some of the guys that we thought might be in play, you know, guys like Tyree Wilson, just didn't do much at all for the Raiders last year. So that's part of this exercise, is we think we know what they're going to do, or we would like to think that we do, but we don't. This year more than ever. Because while we thought we had Pete Carroll figured out pretty well after 15 years, size and spec thresholds, the type of player they're looking for, a lot of those things are going to remain in the way that John Schneider grades the draft because he ran the grading system before. But Mike McDonald's input and the schemes that he runs, Ryan Grubb and what he's going to do on offense are going to be different. And when John Schneider says they're going to take best player available and try to ignore need in those early rounds, not reach, sometimes by very definition means it's very likely, unless they take an offensive guard, which is what we all agree right now is the biggest weakness, that anyone they take in the first round is going to come along with some backlash because the perception will be, well, wait a minute, we're good there. If one of the top receivers falls to 16, the Seahawks take him, the fan base is going to freak out. We don't need a receiver. The same thing would happen at corner. Offensive tackle, I think it would take some explaining. People just wouldn't understand it at first. And quarterback falls into that category now more than ever. If the Seahawks hadn't gone out and acquired Sam Howell, I think this conversation would be ramping up big time. And in fact, the conversation after what's been happening with Michael Penix and how good the draft process has gone for him, and how this whole conversation might actually be a moot point because he might not even last to 16 now. And in fact, Brandon said on the show yesterday, he doesn't think he will. He thinks those six quarterbacks are all going to go before the Seahawks pick comes along. So it may be a moot point, but if they hadn't acquired Howell, the conversation may be very different, right? It may be, what would it take to move up three or four spots to pounce on Michael Penix if he gets to 13 or 14, if he gets past the Raiders and the Broncos. But this, you can file this one away as a what if, a hypothetical. What if it's just so obvious, it's staring us right in the face that we're dismissing it, right? and that we're going to look back after the draft and go, of course they were going to take Michael Penix because Ryan Grubb had so much success with him in college. So I've laid out five reasons why I think he could still be in play. And if he were the pick, shocking as it might be to some, why it would make sense. Let's start here at the top. If you're watching on YouTube, you'll be able to see this. If you're listening, head over to YouTube. Check this out. Number one, he's a potential franchise QB. That's the first one. He's good. And you can debate he's not a perfect process. None of these guys are. Maybe one of the most historically good, potentially, quarterback classes in a very long time. Maybe since 1983. But none of these guys are perfect. None of them are guaranteed to be a franchise quarterback. There are even Caleb Williams detractors out there. There is a growing buzz that Drake may be falling, potentially out of the top four. But he's good. There's no denying that he is a potential franchise quarterback. The arm talent is elite. He was extremely productive in college. Kalen DeBoer, his former coach at UW, called him, quote, one of the single best leaders I've seen in my life. And yet he carries out that leadership with a humility and a confidence, as John Schneider refers to it anytime he talks about quarterbacks, as he looks for a guy that can tilt the room. Michael Penix checks that box. You say he can't throw over the middle. Do you know that he can't, or has he just not been asked to do it? Could it be a case where Ryan Grubb was taking advantage of what their strength was, and that was those outside receivers and the routes they liked to run and the way teams were playing them and one-on-one opportunities on the outside? That's where you're going to get those one-on-ones. You're not going to get as many of them in the middle of the field. So just because he hasn't been really productive at UW throwing over the middle of the field, does that mean he can't? I find that hard to believe. At 6'3", I find that very hard to believe. So that's the first thing. He's good. He's worth taking in the first round. If you're worried about the injury history, he's had two healthy seasons. And I'll even take it a step further. Not just two healthy seasons, but the way he got beat up in that national championship game and just kept coming back. And then 2 weeks later, turned around and practiced the entire week in Mobile at the Senior Bowl. I think that's to his credit, and it shows that he's not fragile by any means. And then he went out in his pro day yesterday and showed that he's much more athletic than people gave him credit for, running a 4.5, 4.40 and recording a vertical jump of 37 inches. Second point, there's no middle class in this draft class, in my opinion. There is no tier two. I know. There's some Spencer Rattler believers out there. There's some Joe Milton believers and Jordan Travis, Michael Pratt. I don't believe any of those guys are franchise quarterbacks. Of that group, I think Rattler has the best chance, but he's not a big dude. He's not a big dude. And as much as he talked after his pro day about how he loves to throw deep and he had some beautiful looking long throws, I watched three of his games, every play from three of his games, three of his better games, and he attempted five deep balls. Four of them were severely underthrown. I like him. I just, you know, off the top of my head, I think of a guy like Taylor Heinicke or Mike White, where they might come in and show flashes, and you think, wow, this guy's really got something. But over the long haul, I don't see him being a 10-year no-brainer starting quarterback in the league. I just don't. And so if you don't get one of these guys in the first round, yeah, you can say take a shot on a guy later, but the Seahawks only have seven picks and they have one day to pick and they have other needs at premium positions. You need to start thinking about the future and stacking some of those rooms. I'd hate to see them use a third or a fourth of a limited draft pool on a quarterback that I don't think has franchise potential. The next reason, you look ahead to next year, and I made this case a couple weeks ago. Hey, maybe the Seahawks are waiting until next year because this was before they traded for Sam Howell. I think it played into a big reason they traded for Sam Howell. Because next year, I think there will be fewer QB needy teams. We'll look at this after the draft, but do yourself a favor and do, this is an exercise I did on the show 3 weeks ago. Either go back and find that show or just look at the list of NFL teams and put a check mark next to the ones that are set at quarterback. Circle the ones that you think absolutely are looking for one this offseason. And then match them up with the six top quarterbacks in this draft. And then you'll see as you start to project out to next year, we're not going to have 7 or 8 quarterback desperate teams again. We're not. There will be fewer of them next year. However, the class doesn't look great. There's some guys with upside, and we might be having a very different conversation a year from now. Nobody thought Jaden Daniels was a first round pick this time a year ago. Nobody did. At least not anyone who watched him at Arizona State and previously in his career. And so, you know, maybe a Quinn Ewers takes that next step or a Carson Beck. You know, after that, you get to Shedeur Sanders. Does anyone want to touch that train wreck with what Deion's been saying now about all his demands? I don't. Then you get into like, I don't know, Cam Ward after that. There's some major question marks. There's no one that you can look ahead to next year and say he's a definite first round pick. There just isn't. And even if there was, Seahawks, you know, are probably going to be competitive again this year, at least enough to avoid drafting high, which makes it tough to go get that guy. Next reason, he's an obvious system fit. His offensive coordinator that put him in position to potentially win the Heisman Trophy, you know, and had him literally one of the most productive quarterbacks in college the last 2 years is his offensive coordinator now in Seattle. His offensive line coach is now in Seattle. Those guys know him as well as anyone, which, you know, little kind of underneath side note, if they don't draft him and he's there, might tell you something too. But like I said earlier, this might just be so obvious that we're dismissing it, but it's the right choice. Ryan Grubb would know exactly how to call a game, how to put a game sheet together that matches what Michael Penix can do. And then the final one is this. Finding a franchise quarterback is the hardest thing to do in football. It's the biggest challenge any GM ever faces. It might be one of the hardest things to do in all of sports. Maybe you can make an argument that finding a true ace starting pitcher in baseball is close. But I think it's finding a legit, game-changing, room-tilting franchise quarterback in the NFL. And so given the fact that next year's class is no slam dunk and there are no guarantees, I don't think there are any free agents next year. There won't be a Kirk Cousins. You know, maybe Dak Prescott, but are you going to pay $50 million for a guy, if that's the case, that the Cowboys didn't deem worthy of a new contract? And do you want to commit that much room anyway? Isn't the advantage you're looking for with a new regime, new coaching staff, everything else, as you try to get back to another, you know, try to build this thing into a consistent Super Bowl winner? Don't you want to take advantage of a rookie quarterback contract at some point when your starting quarterback is in his now mid-30s? Yeah, I think you do. And so because it's so difficult, why put all your eggs in one basket? Why take that risk? I believe Sam Howell has franchise quarterback potential. I believe that Schneider believes it, and that's why he acquired him. It wasn't just to have a cheap backup or a stopgap. He thinks he's got a shot. They're going to move on from Geno Smith next year. If he has a so-so year, he'll be cut. If he has a good enough year that there's trade interest in him next year, and there might be if he has a good season under Ryan Grubb because of what I just talked about. Because there aren't going to be a lot of quarterbacks available that are slam dunks next year. So you could trade him. You saved $25 million last year of his deal. Sam Howell is going to be, his cap hit next year is $1.1 million. If you take Penix at 16, his cap hit's going to be about $4.2 million. How did I come up with that? Emmanuel Forbes was the 16th pick of the draft last year by the Commanders. His cap hit in year two, or I'm sorry, in his first year is $4.2 million. So now you're talking roughly $5 million in total cap hits for your QB room. You save $20 million at the position. And you hedge. You double down. There are no guarantees, but this would be the closest thing to it. between Sam Howell and Michael Penix Jr., you have a really good chance that one of those guys is going to establish himself as worthy of being the starter for a very long time.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
You almost can't fail if you do that. Think about RG3 Kirk Cousins, drafted in the same year. Who would have thought of those two that Kirk Cousins would go on to be the second highest earner in NFL history because he's played so well and meant so much to the teams that he's played for? You might think I'm crazy. I can't wait to see the comments. But if you just look at this with an open mind, it would make some sense. Like I said, it might not even come to this because he might be gone by 10 or 11. He might end up in Denver or Vegas. But imagine that scenario where a year from now, we're looking at having Sam Howell, Michael Penix on the roster. Those guys battle it out. The winner's your starter. You have a long-term answer at the position, regardless of which guy it is. Sam Howell's actually younger than Michael Penix. And then you have all that cap space you've gained and an entire allocation of draft picks that you don't have to worry about using to try to find your guy. And right now they have an extra fourth through the comp pick system. They get their fifth back essentially because they earn another comp pick and they lose one next year for Leonard Williams. So now you've got eight picks in a draft that's expected to be much stronger because all the COVID guys are gone. Kind of makes sense, doesn't it? Now, if you're worried about, well, if we do that, you're basically using a first-round pick on a player who's not going to play his rookie year. And some of you will use the word waste. I just know that. You're wasting a draft pick on a guy that's not going to play his first year. And then you don't pick again until the end of the third round. You're right. That's a concern. But I would challenge you to go look at the drafts that the 49ers and especially the Rams have had the last couple of years where they didn't have picks until the third round because they traded them all away. You can find value. And we're going to do that exercise on Monday. Michael Thompson, my good mock drafting buddy, writer for 12th Man Rising. We're going to do dueling mock drafts on Monday. He's going to do one. He showed me some tonight and I said, I don't want to know. Surprise me. He's going to present a mock draft on Monday with the Seahawks taking Penix at 16 and then trying to manipulate the draft afterwards to show as best as he can how they can still get value and check some boxes and fill some holes. And then I'll do a draft with no quarterback and we'll see which one you like better. Until then, I am Dan Viens. This is Seahawks Forever. You can follow me on Twitter at Seahawks Forever. Don't forget to like the video, subscribe, hit the bell, do all those things. Appreciate the view, the listen, the support. Got some great guests coming up over the next couple of weeks. And as we head into the draft, I'll be live streaming during the first round of the draft. Lots of good stuff coming up this month. And if you follow me on Twitter, you won't miss any of it. You'll get all the updates. So until next time, forever and always, go Hawks. Thanks for watching.